So imagine taking a powerful psychedelic, right? Like a compound that's famous for just completely shattering reality.
Right.
But instead of launching you into this intense, hours-long trip,
Yeah.
your brain automatically yanks a biological handbrake and it stops the hallucination before it even starts. And it turns out you have a receptor in your brain doing exactly that, like right now.
Yeah, which I think completely shatters this comforting metaphor we usually rely on when talking about the brain.
The lock and key thing.
Exactly, the idea of a lock and a key. We love this narrative that, you take a compound, it finds the exact right master switch, you hear a click, and you just get a single clean effect.
Right, like pushing a button on a machine.
Yeah, exactly. But when you actually look at the neurochemistry, that clean lock and key metaphor just completely falls apart. I mean, we're looking at a biological landscape that isn't just a row of neat little binary switches.
Yeah.
It's a wildly complex, interdependent ecosystem. So pressing one button actually triggers a tug of war across the entire brain. You cannot isolate a single note and ignore the rest of the chord. The brain operates as a complex system of competing forces.
And that is exactly our mission for today. We are taking a deep dive into this incredible scientific article from the OTW Journal.
Yeah, it's a great paper.
It's titled The Other Receptor, Serotonin 5-HTTC, and the Psychedelic Balance. And our goal here is to look way beyond that famous, psychedelic trip switch in the brain.
Right.
We want to understand this hidden balancing ecosystem of receptors that quietly regulate our mood, our motivation, and our dopamine. Ultimately revealing how the brain operates as a chord, not a single note. So, okay, let's unpack
Let's
this.
do it.
We have to start with the famous switch everyone already talks about and then meet its shadow, right?
Yeah, well, when people hear the word serotonin, they immediately think of it as one singular thing, like the happy chemical.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But the reality is that serotonin is just a messenger, and it does its work by binding to at least 14 different receptor subtypes.
14.
Yeah,
Wow.
scattered all throughout the brain. And they are grouped into structural families. So the most famous family, especially when we talk about altered states of consciousness, is the 5-HT2 family.
Right, and this family has three main siblings. We've got 2A, 2B, and 2C.
Exactly. And in terms of their basic molecular grammar, those three are nearly identical.
Okay.
They are what neurobiologists call GQ coupled receptors.
GQ couple.
Yeah, which simply means that when a molecule of serotonin binds to any of them, they trigger the exact same chain reaction inside the cell. So they activate an enzyme called phospholipase C, which in turn causes a massive flood of calcium inside the cell.
Wait, okay, let me pause you there because when I hear calcium, I'm thinking of like a glass of milk or strong bones.
Right.
What does a flood of calcium actually do inside a brain cell?
It's the same element, but an entirely different job. So, in the nervous system, a sudden spike in intracellular calcium acts like a biochemical alarm bell.
Oh, okay.
It's this universal signal that tells the neuron to take action. So, to fire an electrical impulse, or to change its physical shape, or release its own chemical messengers. So, chemically speaking, 2A, 2B, and 2C are ringing the exact same alarm bell.
Okay, so if they're speaking the same language, using the same chemical grammar to ring the exact same bell, why do they do such wildly different things? Because the source material emphasizes this heavily, that location is destiny.
Yes, location changes the entire context of that alarm bell. So 5-HT2A is densely packed in the cortex.
Okay.
That's the executive suite of the brain, the evolutionary newest part responsible for high-level perception, language, abstract thought.
Right.
So when a classic psychedelic rings the calcium alarm bell at the 2A receptor in the cortex, it acts as a visionary master switch. It profoundly alters reality.
And then you have 2B, right? The middle child, which isn't even mostly located in the brain.
No, not at all.
It's sitting largely in the body, primarily in the heart and the gut. And the article notes that overstimulating the 2B receptor is what made certain historical diet drugs incredibly dangerous.
Yeah,
Yeah,
fenfen.
causing serious heart valve issues because it was ringing that calcium alarm bell in cardiac tissue, right?
Exactly, yeah. And that brings us to the star of our deep dive, which is 5-HT2C.
Right.
So instead of the executive suite or the heart, the 2C receptor is clustered in the primal kind of evolutionary basement of the brain. We're talking about regions like the limbic system, the basal ganglia, the hypothalamus.
So it's sitting at the absolute crossroads of human survival,
Yeah.
like the areas that manage hunger, baseline drive, and our daily mood. I was trying to visualize this while reading the notes. It feels like 2A and 2C are like identical twins who chose vastly different career paths.
Oh, I like that.
Like they have the exact same genetics, they speak the exact same language, but 2A moved to the big city to become this wild visionary artist reshaping reality in the cortex, while 2C stayed home to become a grounded, highly practical accountant working in the back office of the limbic system, just quietly managing the mundane but absolutely vital daily ledgers of our reward seeking.
What's fascinating here is that the biological reality reflects that dynamic beautifully, because 2C is sitting right there at the structural foundation of reward and motivation. That identical chemical signal results in vastly different behavioral outcomes.
Oh.
The accountant is taking the exact same biochemical memo, that spike in calcium, but applying it to how deeply we crave a sugary snack on a Tuesday afternoon, rather than using it to induce a profound altered state of consciousness.
But this accountant receptor has a biological superpower that just completely threw me for a loop.
Yeah, it's wild.
The source material says 2C has an ability that sets it apart from almost every other known neurotransmitter receptor.
Yeah.
Like it chemically rewrites its own genetic instructions based on what the brain needs in real time.
Yeah. The 5-HT2C receptor literally edits its own RNA. It's a process called A to I RNA editing.
Okay, I have to admit total confusion here, or at least I want to push back based on literally everything I learned in high school biology.
Fair enough.
Because we are taught the central dogma, right? DNA is the permanent blueprint. You make a photocopy of it called RNA, and you use that photocopy to build the protein, the receptor.
Right.
The blueprint is fixed. So how and why is this receptor changing its own code mid-process, like mid-construction?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it completely upends that high school biology dogma. The brain's chemistry isn't fixed hardware. It's living, editable text. So after the DNA gene is transcribed into messenger RNA, but before the cellular machinery actually builds the receptor protein, a specific enzyme intercepts the message.
Oh, it intercepts it.
Yes. It moves along the RNA transcript and chemically alters specific molecular letters. It converts certain adenosine bases, the A, into inosine, the I, and the cell reads that inosine as an entirely different letter.
So it's not like swapping out the hard drive. It's more like the brain is sending a live software patch over Wi-Fi to update the receptor's code while the app is still running.
That is a perfect way to visualize it.
Yeah.
And because there are several different sites on the specific RNA sequence that can be edited in various combinations, a single 5-HT2C gene can give rise to a whole array of different receptor variants, which we call isoforms.
Isoforms, okay.
Yeah, so you end up with slightly different versions of the receptor depending on how it was patched.
What does that software patch actually change about how the receptor works physically? Like, why does the brain expend the energy to do this?
Well, the edited forms differ significantly in how strongly they couple to their G protein. So if you go back to that internal alarm bell, the phospholipid C and the calcium, some of these edited versions of the 2C receptor are incredibly sensitive and ring the bell loudly with very little provocation. And others are very weak signalers. So this editing process acts as a dynamic cellular volume knob. The brain can physically alter the shape of the receptor to turn its own sensitivity to serotonin up or down, tuned specifically by the environment or the stress levels of the organism.
So the receptor is literally adjusting its own volume based on what life demands of it.
Exactly.
And the article points out this isn't just some abstract cellular party trick. They've found altered patterns of this 5-HTTC editing in animal models of depression, and even in the postmortem brains of people who have died by suicide.
Yeah. The data points straight to this molecular dial being deeply bound up with the pathology of mood disorders.
Wow.
If that software patching process gets stuck or dials the volume to the wrong setting, the entire underlying system of mood and motivation is thrown off balance. You either feel too much or nothing at all.
Man, that's heavy. But okay, if the 2C receptor has the ability to dynamically crank its own volume up or down, what exactly is it listening for? And more importantly, what is it shouting at?
Right.
Because it turns out, the main thing the 2C receptor is interacting with isn't just serotonin, it's shouting at dopamine.
Yeah. So if the 2A receptor in the cortex is stepping on the gas of perception, the 2C receptor in the deeper brain is acting as a built-in brake on the brain's reward system.
A brake.
Yeah. It exerts a powerful tonic restraining influence on the dopamine neurons in the mesolimbic and mesocortical pathways.
Okay. Let's translate mesolimbic pathway into everyday life.
Sure, sure.
When we talk about this brake on the reward system, we're talking about the engine of wanting.
Right. Yeah.
This is the circuit that drives you to endlessly scroll social media, or the sudden intense craving you get for a huge meal, right?
Exactly. It governs the intensity of our desires. And the way 2C regulates this introduces a massive paradigm shift in neuropharmacology. The researchers use a term called constitutive activity.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because if we go back to the lock and key, you assume the lock does nothing until the key's inserted. But constitutive activity means the 2C receptor is signaling at a low baseline level, even without any serotonin present at all.
Yeah.
It's like a car idling with the parking brake slightly engaged. It doesn't even need the key in the ignition to hold the car back from rolling down the hill. It just naturally exerts this constant quiet tension on your dopamine machinery.
Even while you're just sitting there listening to this, 2C is actively holding back your dopamine.
That is so wild.
And when you look at the real-world implications of that biological parking brake, it touches almost every aspect of human behavior related to wanting and satiety. If you activate the 2C receptor, meaning you pull that parking brake up even higher, dopamine release in the reward system falls.
And as a result, craving drops.
Exactly.
The article actually brings up how this exact mechanism was used for a former anti-obesity drug called lorcaserin.
Right, yeah.
It was a 2C agonist. Yeah. So it turned up the 2C receptor to dampen the dopamine reward associated with eating, so people simply wanted less food.
Yeah, and on the flip side, if you block the 2C receptor, if you release that parking brake completely, dopamine and noradrenaline levels rise. The brain is flooded with more of those motivating, activating chemicals.
Okay, I see.
That's the underlying logic behind certain antidepressants, like igomelatine, which block 2C to lift the brake and elevate a depressed mood.
Right. So by holding this constant, quiet hand on the machinery of wanting, 2C is woven into the stories of obesity, of addiction, of anxiety, and depression. It dictates how intensely we feel a craving on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
But this brings us to the core tension of the source material. If 2C is constantly pulling back on dopamine and dampening excitement, what happens when a massive wave of serotonin, or a classic psychedelic drug, washes over the brain and hits both the 2A receptor and the 2C receptor at the exact same time?
Well, the whole single switch narrative of psychedelics totally unravels right here.
Okay.
Because classic serotonergic psychedelics like LSD, psilocin, DMT, mescaline, they are completely non-selective. They don't just politely knock on the door of the 2A receptor and ignore the rest of the family. They grip 5-HT2A tightly, but they also firmly grip 5-HT2C.
Okay, I have to ask about this because the methodology sounds a bit absurd when you read it. The source explains how neuroscientists study this tug of war using something called the head twitch response in rodents.
Yeah, the head twitch.
But, I mean, you can't exactly ask a mouse if it's hallucinating.
No, you can't.
How do they actually know the 2A receptor is being activated in a way that correlates to a trip?
It's a great question because measuring consciousness in a mouse is obviously impossible.
Okay.
But the head twitch response is this rapid, involuntary side-to-side head movement that mice and rats reliably display when given a classic psychedelic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And over decades of research, neuroscientists have confirmed this specific twitch is a highly accurate behavioral surrogate for the 2A-mediated psychedelic effect. If the mouse twitches, the 2A receptor is highly active, and the animal is experiencing the neurological equivalent of a psychedelic state.
That is fascinating. But the research from Fantagrossi and Halberstadt shows something else, right? While the 2A receptor drives that head twitch, the 2C receptor's activity actively fights to suppress it.
Yes. So when the psychedelic molecule floods the nervous system, the 2A receptor is flooring the accelerator in the cortex, driving that massive shift in perception.
Right.
But simultaneously, that exact same molecule is binding to the 2C receptor in the limbic system, which desperately yanks the handbrake, sending opposing cellular signals to suppress the excitation.
Okay, so if 2A is flooring the accelerator and 2C is yanking the handbrake, doesn't that imply the trip someone experiences isn't just a drug turning a light bulb on?
Mm-hmm.
The actual subjective feeling is the tension of these two massive neurochemical systems wrestling each other in real time.
The pharmacology heavily supports that view. The psychedelic experience is a delicate balance struck across a family of receptors pushing and pulling against each other. And the specific ratio, so how strongly a particular compound pulls on 2A versus how strongly it pulls on 2C, might actually dictate the underlying emotional tone of the experience.
Oh, wow. That makes total sense. Because it explains why two different drugs that both technically work through serotonin can feel radically different to the person taking them.
Exactly. If a compound is heavily skewed toward 2-way with very little 2C engagement, the lack of a dopamine break might make the experience feel highly activating, visionary, perhaps even manic or euphoric.
Right.
But if another compound hits 2C very hard alongside 2A, the heavy application of that break might make the experience feel much more grounded, heavy, or even physically restricting and anxious. The nuanced flavor of the altered state lives in the ratio between the siblings.
Yeah, and the article points out an even deeper layer of complexity here called functional selectivity.
Oh yeah, functional selectivity.
It basically says that a drug binding to 2C might activate some of its internal signaling pathways while leaving others completely untouched.
Which completely dissolves the old idea of one drug, one receptor, one effect. It means the chemical key doesn't just turn the lock. It can turn the lock halfway, or jiggle it to only open the deadbolt, but not the handle.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, depending on the specific molecular structure of the drug, the 2C receptor can behave slightly differently, sending a unique combination of signals into the cell.
And understanding this tug-of-war isn't just an academic exercise for neuroscientists looking at twitching mice. The source outlines how this 2A versus 2C ratio is the master key that pharmaceutical researchers are trying to use right now to design the future of mental health medicines.
Yeah, and psychiatry already leans on this balance implicitly. Many of the atypical antipsychotics used today work in part by blocking the 2C receptor. But the real frontier is in the psychedelic space, where researchers are trying to develop what they call psychoplastogens.
Psychoplastogens. These are the non-hallucinogenic compounds.
Right, right.
The ones designed to trigger the neuroplasticity, the actual physical brain healing and rewiring benefits of a psychedelic, but without the intense hours-long trip that requires clinical supervision.
Exactly. The goal is to keep the structural benefits to the neurons, helping them grow new connections, but trim out the intense subjective experience.
Right.
Because that would make the treatment much more scalable for widespread medical use. And the strategy for doing that involves turning the dials on that 2A versus 2C balance.
Okay.
If you can design a molecule that hits the exact right ratio of the receptor family, perhaps relying heavily on 2C's dampening effect, you might be able to decouple the neurological healing from the hallucination.
So what does this all mean for the future of these drugs? Because I have to push back on the pharmaceutical optimism here for a second.
Sure enough.
Because the article is very clear about the honest cautions.
Yeah.
If the 2C receptor is this master volume knob for dopamine, for appetite, for mood, and for dampening psychedelics, isn't targeting it with a highly specific synthetic drug kind of like trying to fix a traffic jam in one neighborhood by just turning every single traffic light in the entire city green?
Yeah.
Like, you might get cars moving, but you're going to cause massive collisions everywhere else.
This raises an important question, and your skepticism is highly warranted. The source material explicitly validates that caution.
Huh.
Manipulating a receptor that is so deeply woven into fundamental survival systems, eating, wanting, moving, is rarely a clean process. You are pulling on a single thread of a massive ecological web.
Case in point, lorcaserin. We talked about it earlier as the 2C agonist used for weight loss.
Right.
The article notes it was entirely withdrawn from the market in 2020 because long-term trials showed a possible increased cancer risk.
Yeah, that is a stark cautionary tale. You successfully hit the 2C receptor to lower appetite, but you end up triggering downstream effects in other biological systems that are entirely unintended and deeply dangerous.
Right.
Furthermore, the article is careful to point out that much of our highly detailed 2C science still comes from preclinical models. We're talking rodents and isolated cell systems in petri dishes.
Yeah, I mean, a mouse head twitch isn't human consciousness. You can measure the twitch, but you can't measure the awe or the terror of the experience.
Exactly. Yeah. While the core biochemical effects are solid, you know, the receptor exists, it edits its own RNA, it restrains dopamine, it engages with psychedelics.
Yeah.
The exact way those specific edited isoforms shape the human conscious experience is still highly theoretical. The brain simply does not work in isolated switches, and assuming we can perfectly engineer an outcome by tweaking one receptor is hubris.
Which brings us back to where we started. We are culturally obsessed with the fireworks of the 5-HT2A receptor. It's the sexy visionary switch that gets all the documentary screen time and the flashy headlines.
Definitely.
But this deep dive really shows that the quiet self-editing, dopamine-restraining 5-HT2C receptor is what actually keeps the entire system grounded. The brain works as a chord. Not a single note. If you just press one key on a piano, you get a sound. But the emotion, the tension, the actual music comes from the interaction between the notes being played simultaneously.
Beautifully put. To understand the psychedelic state, or even just why we feel motivated or lethargic on a normal Tuesday, you have to look at the entire family of receptors acting in concert, resisting and enabling one another moment to moment.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I know you had a final thought based on the source material that really shifts how we should think about ourselves on a fundamental level.
Yeah. I want to leave everyone with a thought to mull over regarding that RNA editing revelation we talked about earlier.
Yeah, the software patch.
Right. Think about what it means that the 5-HT2C receptor can chemically rewrite its own genetic instructions in response to the environment. If our brains are actively repatching their own code in response to trauma or depression or healing, then our baseline levels of motivation, our capacity for reward, and perhaps even what we consider our core personalities aren't fixed hardware.
Wow.
We are quite literally living editable text. We are actively rewriting ourselves at a microscopic level every single day.
So the blueprint isn't permanent, and we aren't just stuck with the code we were given. We are constantly sending ourselves new software patches. That is an incredible thought to end on. Remember, you can't just look at the lock and the key. You have to look at the whole door. Keep questioning the switches, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.